All right, Friedrich and Chanukah. We're up to in the middle of Mishnah 10, Pirkei Avos, Perek Aleph. Mishnah Yud. The Mishnah said like this. We already started it. We'll get back into it. Shmaya Avtalion Kibnihem. The next in the line of the Messiah was Shmaya and Avtalion. Shmaya Oimer. Eloi Vesemlach. I love the work, love to work. Usna es rabbanus, hate positions of authority, literally the rabbanus, anything of like to be like a rabbi. And don't become too familiar with the government. So we explained, we started off speaking about how the whole point is to love work, to make sure that you are, no matter how big you think you are, you should love to work, and to recognize that anyways in life, this life is filled with work and things to do, so you might as well, instead of being annoyed at life that it's filled with work, grab onto that and say that, wow, that's what life's all about, and I'd love to work because anyways that's what gives me life in this world. And when you do that, then it changes life from being something that you just have to always do, work that's involved in getting a fulfilling life, and it changes it from being something that you just have to do to something that you actually love to do. And when you focus that on Torah and coming closer to Hashem, it brings to the greatest fulfillment that you could possibly get from any work that you could possibly do. The next part of the Mishnah said, "Usnoas rabbanus." You should hate positions of authority. Literally, literally means the rabbanus. You know, anything that's involved in becoming a rabbi. So the Bat Yair says that he said that this is why does it say that you should hate the rabbanus? Says that it basically harabanus mekaveras es balel, the rabbinate buries its beard, right? The famous Rashi that I forget exactly where it was. He said, just make them rabbis and they'll be destroyed by themselves. Someone tells that to Moshe Rabbeinu. I forget the exact context. It's just, you don't have to kill them. Just make them rabbis and they'll destroy them. So obviously the question arises. I mean, we have rabbis. We need rabbis. So if rabbis are such a thing that to be run away from the rabbinate, so what are you supposed to do? We're not going to have rabbis. So the Rashbat's answer is, he says that this only applies to positions of authority in the secular world. You know, you should be opposed to becoming like a big doctor or a big anything, any position of authority in the secular world. However, in the world of Torah, of course, that's the whole point. You should try to be a big rabbi, try to be a big rabbi. That's a great thing to yearn for. However, there's a famous story, not so famous, but a story with the Chazon Ish, that someone once went to the Chazon Ish. He asked him, you know, I'm thinking about joining a certain koilel, that the whole koilel is geared to producing rabbanim. You know, they learn, they get smicha, and they know halacha, and that's what I'm thinking about doing, to get into that line of quote-unquote work. So the Chazon Ish said, it's so interesting, usually people don't work so hard to get something that's hated. So he obviously didn't approve necessarily of going into that line of work, so to speak, that you should just try to become a rabbi. So if that's the case, then again, according to the Chazon Ish, it seems that you should not be trying actively to become a rabbi even. So if that's the case, then where are we going to get rabbanim and where are we going to get any of these things? So across the line from the Sfas or Chaim Volozh and the Kotzker or the Amshin of a Rebbe, the old Amshin of a Rebbe, they all say a similar theme. They say that but you have to take in context, as everything in Pirkei Avos is to be learned from, the whole Mishnah. It said, "Eo v'samlocha usnas rabbanus." So the Mishnah is telling us that you should love to work. Meaning, when you're approaching to become a rabbi, so you can become, wow, you know, get a plush seat, it's geschmack, it's nice. If that's your approach, then you got problems. But if you're approaching the rabbinate and you're saying, "Eo v'samlocha," that I love to work, I love to actually, you know, work and to serve the kehila and to make sure that I'm actively working hard in this, then it's fine. But it's meaning it's the same thing. When you're coming to be a rav, you should love the work involved in it and hate the rabbanus. You know, hate the nice robes and the kavod that you get from that. That's how you should become a rav. That's how you should look at it and that's how you should approach it. And in that sense, of course, that's something to get to. If you approach it in the other sense that I'm just going for some kavod or something like that, then you should definitely run away from that. So Nachman has this mashal that he says in the Kutta Maran 194 that to help us understand this whole thing of usnas rabbanus, to hate positions of authority. The mashal actually he brings down for a totally different nimshal, meaning he brings out a different lesson entirely than what I'm going to bring it down for. However, the the mashal is very clearly a clear illustration of how you could see what it means for our purposes of Isnas or Abonis to hate the positions of authority. There's a guy, you know, if you wanna look at it like this, the guy called, like, you know, I don't know, I just need him, Abu Jabjab, some guy, you know, some lowly clerk out in some town. And he is his boss, you know, the boss of boss is the Sultan, some guy, the Sultan Mamad, you know, I don't know, in some land, some distant land that he's never seen, he's never heard of. And so he sends his loyal servant to some distant town to take care of some business. So this guy, Abu Jabjab, he's a clerk, he's a lowly clerk, but he got sent on a mission from the Sultan to go take care of stuff. So he gets to the town, and, you know, he has a nice coat, he has a nice thing, and he comes there, and the simple people of the town see a pretty nice carriage and a nice looking guy. So they say, you know, oh, okay, someone official is here. So they say, who is this? And he goes, I'm the Sultan. I'm Sultan Mahmud. So they bow down, and they go, wow, the Sultan's here. Quickly, quickly, they clear out the nicest offices and the thing, and they say, please, they roll out the red carpet. And he goes, thank you very much. Yeah, shkayach. And he goes right in, and he says, no, let's go. I need to take care of some business here. It's low-key. You don't have to tell anyone, but, you know, I'm here to take care of some business for a few weeks. So they start bringing him, you know, food and everything and money and everything. And every day they come in and they bow down to him and they say, Sultan, the greatest ruler of all the lands and everything. And they give him all the accolades of the Sultan. Okay, so he's enjoying it. A few weeks go by. You know, he's having a really good time. And all of a sudden this really fancy carriage pulls up. And out walks the Sultan himself. And the Sultan walks in. And he, you know, knocks on the door and bursts it right open. And this guy, Abu Jabda, is sitting there. He's like eating his donut and coffee. He's like, oh, God, the Sultan. And then he almost chokes and he goes, how can I? And before he says anything, the two guys that always serve him every day come in. And they fall to the floor in front of, you know, this Abu Jabda, little guy. And they say, oh, great Sultan, we're the master of everything, the leader of all lands, you're the greatest of great. And the Sultan stand there like, turning red, and Abu Jabda was like, oh, I'm like, no, you're the greatest, and he's turning purple and red, and he can't control himself, he's out of his box, right? So the rabbi brings him down, I'm not bringing him down for a totally different reason, different nimshal, but you see from that you can learn from that very clearly that in this world, you know, we all sometimes take a little cover, you know, this guy says I'm great, this guy, you know, you take a little cover, but if and when you recognize that, you know, the king is standing right in front of you, right there, and all the cover is really his, and if you take any cover, it's just super embarrassing to do such a thing, so then we'd have that embarrassment already that this guy has, and we would be like, listen, stop bowing down, there's a master over here, there's a sultan here, and he's the one that you should totally recognize and totally. Moshe Rabbeinu was called the Anav Mikol Adam. He was the humblest of persons. So I thought once that this might be alluded to in his name. His name is Moshe, is Mem Shin Hei. It's the Rashi Tevis of Mimchain Shivta Yishgiach. From his place on high, he looks down. Zot omeret that if we recognize that there's little video cameras looking down on us from every single place, then we'd be humble. Why? Because we're taking cover, but Hashem is right here. It's only when you feel that the Sultan's really far away and this man, he's not going to see, he's not going to care, you know, let me take some cover now, that you can take the cover. But if and when you have this impression and this feeling that Hashem is right on top of you, so then anytime someone gives you cover, you say, it's very nice, but you know, I'm not the boss, there's a boss. So then Moshe Rabbeinu was able to have that in the ultimate sense. The last part of the Mishnah says, "Va'al tisvad el rishus." Don't become overly familiar with the government. So the Bat Nuva gives two ways of understanding what this means. First of all, the first way he says is that he connects it to the beginning of the Mishnah, where we're speaking about authority and chav and chashivus and things like that. He says a person that sometimes is going after those things, he loves the positions of authority, he wants to become a politician, he wants to become in the government, he wants to become something big in his life, so he's asked to always go to government bodies. So therefore, if and when we say to stay away from government and stay away from these things, it's all the same thing. Stay away from all these positions of authority, there's no reason to get involved. Another reason for steering clear of the government is that because a lot of times they're definitely not advantageous to a person serving Hashem. Most of the governments, the Israeli government, maybe not, depends on who you ask, don't have a particular affinity for religion. As much as they allow it, they're not necessarily going to be like, oh, you know, you got to do this and this religiously. Okay, fine. So therefore, they're going to probably try to put barriers in your way. I mean, sadly enough, the American government has some I say sadly because, you know, the American government has some people that are from, and, you know, they do give them allowances and they do take care of them in a pretty nice way. I remember Chaim Kramer told me that there was a breast of a guy years and years and years ago that he was sick of doing the whole running away from the army thing. So he decided, I'll go to the army. Let's see if they can handle me. So he gets up the first night, chatzos, and does 2 hours of his boat, this screaming on the side of the camp, and then he does the whole day of working out and going, and then the next day he does more, and every second he's running, and he's mimikav the guys, giving out tikkun klalis, and he's like mechazik them, and then he wakes up again, chatzos, and he's like 3 days into it, he kicked the guy out, they gave him all the pachurim, they said, never come back to this army again.
Is this Israeli or American?
Israeli army, no, the American army.
Yeah. Well, the Israeli army is communist.
Yeah, Israeli army. They didn't exactly like. They didn't know how to deal with such a religious guy there, and they didn't want him to be injecting any of those things into the army. Again, I don't advise trying this out because I know other people have tried it and it hasn't worked. But you know, the point is that you should try to stay away from positions of power. And the point is that they're not always so advantageous to come close to Hashem. So this is definitely a good thing. But there's a lot of other interesting explanations in Al Tisvav El Roshus. The word Roshus is not a classic translation that you could say like, oh, government, you know, Roshus. It doesn't, the Mefarshim all explain that this is what it means, but it's not definitely not the classic understanding of what the word Roshus means. But other Mefarshim give different explanations. The Chasam Sofer says that it means Roshus, permission, daily Roshus, you know, give me Roshus. What does that mean? He says, because that's what a government means. A government could do whatever it wants, right? What is it called? Eminent domain. They could just say, you know, here your house lies, we need to build a highway, so boom, you know, knock down your house and dislocate you to some other city, you know, where there's no shuls within 30 miles. That's what a government could do. So he says that's what the mission is telling you, that anyone, Altus Vadalus, just don't connect so much to people that are just, you know, they don't have any bounds to them. This could be a dictator, this could be any guy that feels like he's lawless, that he can do whatever he wants. These type of people are very not advantageous to be near.
You mean like the current Israeli government or the current American government?
Yeah,
or
both, yeah. Any government, because the governments, they could do whatever they want. You might say that the American government maybe even is a little better because it's governed by laws and rules, while this one is not so governed by laws and rules.
Debatable.
It's debatable. The Ritva, he learns a similar pshat, but strangely enough, the Chasam Sefer was quasi Hasidish, so the Ritva is a Rishon in the Gemara, but he learns it on a more spiritual plane. He says the word Rishus doesn't mean government, it means Midas Hadin. He says that Kadosh Baruch Hu, his attribute of strict judgment in this world. So he's saying the Bina Mishnah says that we should be. And thus gives us protection against these right. Meaning he says that when you approach life, El Basamlacha, and you approach life, it will protect you from all the harsh things that this world has to offer. Because any, you know, I mean, you could explain it on a very simple level. Anyone that approaches life in that aspect, that he says that whatever happens, you know, I'm going to love the work, so if anything harsh happens, he says, oh great, this is a challenge, now I can grow from. If he falls and something bad happens, so he says, great, I can become even stronger, right? Nowadays, teaching the afternoons to 18-year-olds, nowadays everyone's very into working out. So the newer generation, they work out a lot, they build their muscles a lot. So the classical thing that they do is, that everyone that works out is that you have to work out this muscle and that muscle today. Then you have to rest it for a day and work out a different muscle. If you want to work every day, or you can take a break for a day or two. Why? Because what happens when you work out the muscle is you rip it. That's literally what happens. You rip the muscle. And then, if you wait a day or two, it heals. But when it heals, it gets tighter and stronger. That's how it works. And so they work it out, they rip it, and it gets tighter and stronger. You rip it, it gets bigger, tighter, and stronger. That's how it works out. Constantly ripping and reattaching. That's the, you know, concept of the whole life. But a person that approaches anything that happens, and he says, wow, something really bad happened, but I'm going to just recognize that this is just a rip that I can now reestablish and reconnect with Hashem from this. So then everything in life, all the dinim are quote-unquote mamtik, because he has this emunah that he's working hard to overcome everything, and it's just part of life that we're here to do. The Chesed LaAbram, he says another interpretation. He said, he says, go through each word. He doesn't just go to the word Rishus, he goes to the word Al Tisvada. Tisvada is also a very interesting lashon. It's not a classical word that's used 1,000 times in the Gemara. Tisvada means, the Mefarshim explained, don't become familiar. But Tisvada literally also means, comes from the word root of connection. Like it says, Vayoda Adamas Ishta, he knew. What does it mean? He knew, he connected with her. Unity between husband and wife. So he says, what does that mean? What does Rishus mean? He describes Rishus as being, again, also like the way the Chasam Sofer said, that it means anything you could do. Chasam Sofer took it in a different tract. He said that it means people that could do anything they want. He says, Al Tisvada Rishus is talking about Rishus as things that are permissible. Like the famous, Kadeshim Tiu. You shouldn't be a novel Rishus of Torah. You should be parish a little bit from things that even are allowed to necessarily partake in. So it's Al Tisvada, don't overly connect with Rishus, with things that are allowed. Right? He says that there are a lot of things that are in the Torah left part. Right? You come to a barbecue, in America on Sunday night, and there's Hasidic Heksher stuff, spare ribs, a huge thing, they have a smoking machine, they have beers, everything is kosher for Yosher, there's somewhat of a distance between the men and the women at the barbecue, everything is mamish kosher for Yosher. They said, listen, if you're going to be there, at least make your brachas with kavana, or do something to take yourself a little bit away from just being, let's go all out and have the best beer ribs and do everything, do a little bit, take a little bit to separate yourself. We were just talking this morning here about the guy that used to sell meat, Trefa Meat in Muncie, famous story that I'm sure everyone's heard of. So he was, my friend was once making a barbecue in Muncie, him and a bunch of guys, they were like, this meat is so good, it's got to be Trefa, and it turns out it was. So whenever things taste too good, you have to be careful. Sat Mereva, to say anything that's parv, there's no such thing as parv. Parv is Trefa, he said. Anything that's in the middle, if it's too in the middle, it falls very easily to the treif side. The Minchas Shabbos says another interesting explanation of the word Rishos. He says it comes from rush. Rush means pour. So he's saying again that the person that takes the whole life and connects it to the beginning of the Mishnah, he says, Eo v'sam alocha, usnas rabbanas. He approaches life that I'm here to work, and I'm here not to get covered from the work, I'm just here to work, because every second of work I'm connecting myself to the Chaim, to Hashem. And it brings me the greatest chias, which is connection to Hashem. He will never come too rushed to poverty. Right? To understand this, you can go to the story, the famous story of the Rebbe, of Nachman, of the Chacham and the Tam, the sophisticated and the simpleton, as it's translated in English, which everyone already knows, but we'll go through it a little bit. The two friends, they grew up together, almost the same house, the same situation, and they're growing up. One had a very sophisticated mind, one had a very simple mind. And they grow up, they go out of the houses, and the sophisticated decides to go to be this thing and that thing, and he goes with using all his chachma all the time and philosophizing.
In 6 months.
What?
He learned to be a goldsmith, a jeweler.
Doctor.
A doctor.
Right. And he basically philosophizes it away from one thing to the next thing, to the next thing, never being happy with what he has, always being... leading himself to more misery.
He went to university.
And so until in the end, he comes back to the town where he is, same as he was, always just very, very wealthy, but absolutely miserable. And the simpleton, he went out, he said, what should I do? I'm a shoemaker. He learned it.
Married.
He got married. Oh, that was a good thing also. He got married.
He got married early.
Early. I hear you.
And he listened to his wife.
Yeah. Well, he didn't just always give in, because, his wife would come over to him and say, listen, Shmerel's making $100 on a shoe, and what are you coming home with $25 on a shoe? So he said, Vos atos tumil, dos is Yerim's maise, and dos is my maise. What does that have to do with me? That's his maise, that's what he does, and this is what I do. It has nothing to do with me.
But he was happy.
And he was happy. He was always happy. Right? He was always happy. He was never, never sad, even though, he wasn't making as much. Why? Because what does that have to do with me? And I have, as everyone knows, when he would come to dinner, he would say to my wife, can you give me a nice, a nice appetizer? And she would cut him a piece of dry bread, and he would say, ah, this is so delicious. This is mamish, what am I appetite? Can you give me, some fish? Cut another slice of bread. Ah, most delicious fish.
Brentos another slice of bread.
Yeah.
And beer.
And beer.
A glass of water.
Maybe some lamb chops. Another thing. Another glass of water. And everything. He was mamish praising her. This is mamish Gan Eden, as the Rebbe says. He mamish had such simplicity and joy with whatever he had that he tasted all of these things. Why? That's like Mincha Shabbos was saying. The person that approaches the whole life, that he's just here to work and work and work and work, and whatever he works in and whatever he does, Hashem's going to give him whatever he's able to get from it, and he's going to be always happy with that, and he's going to be happy in the fact that he's working. This guy, it says in the story that the only time he actually ate was in the middle of when he was building the shoes. He wasn't like he was sitting down and he was having, you know, like a nice suda. He was mamish constantly working, but he was always, and he wasn't even making so much money from it, but he was always so happy with what he was doing, which was working all the time, that he mamish was able to taste everything in all his foods. And that's basically what the Mishnah is saying, is that anyone that recognizes that we're here, Elvas and Lacha, Usnas, Rabbanus, we don't need to have Rabbanus, we don't need to start comparing ourselves to this person and to that person and say, what about them, what about him? That's one of the biggest klipas of nowadays, that everyone's, what about their family, and their family is so perfect, their family is so perfect. It says in the Saras Dibros, a famous Vart, it says that you should not be jealous of your friend's wife and shor and ox and this and that and that. And it says then, and everything that your friend has, you just listed almost everything that your friend has, like everything. So the famous test that the Rebbe's give is that everything that they have is the guns to peckle, their whole peckle. I mean, everyone we see, we look at the other guy and we see, wow, he's got a wife and he's got kids, or he's got a car, or he doesn't got a car but he's got a chauffeur. He's got something that we think is wow. But he says, you don't have the whole peckle. If you have his whole peckle, if you have his wife screaming at him sometime, or if you have his nebuch, his kid that's not feeling so well all the time, or if you have this issue that you have no idea about, then you would never be able to handle his life. So be happy with your life. Everyone has good things and bad things, and everyone has exactly what they need to be able to handle what they need and to be able to come close to Hashem. If you'd have someone else's peckle, the whole peckle, you'd never be jealous of another person. So that's the same thing. A person here, he recognizes that he's here to work. Whatever Hashem serves him, he's here to work. So he's always going to be poor. He's out to Svadal or Shish. He's never going to be rushed. He's never going to have that feeling of I'm rushed. He's always going to be simcha, besimcha, with whatever he has. That same concept could also learn out from these very last words from this very Mishnah. It says al tisvada. This is a little drushy, but it might be true, it might not be. It's coming from me, so it's not necessarily Torah Misina in any way whatsoever. Tisvada also is from a lashon of vidoy. Vidoy is admit. So what does that mean? What does the next word say? Rishus. What does Rishus mean? So Rishus, we said, could mean Rosh, it could mean poor, it could mean Rishus, like they have their permission, it could mean Rishus, that the things that you're allowed to have, also, it could mean government, the simple pshat. Rishus also, like when you learn any of Masechet Shabbos or Erevin, Rishus is a Rishus Yachid, Rishus Rabim, it's a domain. So what does domain mean? It's a place, it's an area where you're stuck in there. It's a closed-in area, so to speak, or it's an open area, but it's an area. It describes something that's like that. So when it says al tizvada rishus, it could be telling us, don't admit to a view of Yiddishkeit that's based on rishus. It's based on rishuyot, like categories. Right? Like, oh, that guy is good because he's a breastliver chassid, and that guy's not good because he's a stolener chassid, you know? Or that guy is chassid because he learns so much and he has a black kippah, and that guy's not chassid because he has a this kippah. Don't buy into like a caste system where there's, you know, different levels of Yiddishkeit. These guys are good, those guys are not, that guy is good, this guy is good. Categorize everyone like that. Why? Because that's not the way Hashem looks at things. Hashem looks at each person, what he's given, where he comes from, where he's going, and how hard, purely how hard he's trying in what he's given to come closer to Hashem. Not by this guy fits into that thing, and that guy fits into that thing. Everyone has to fit into the thing that they feel comfortable and they can grow from Hashem. That's a good thing. That's not a bad thing. However, if and when you do find yourself in those places, or even if you don't find yourself in those places, there's no reason to constantly look at others and say, well, al tisvada rishus, you don't have to fit into any rishus, and you don't have to admit that that's the only way that Hashem loves a person. Rather, recognize that Hashem looks at you. And like we said before, if you recognize that Hashem looks at you and only you, and He's looking at you and He cares about you, then it keeps you away from all sorts of foolishness like kavod and all these different things. And like we always say, it also helps you that you can recognize that Hashem is hearing your words when you're walking down the steps, or hearing your thoughts when you're going down the street. It doesn't make any difference where you are. Just yesterday, just a thought that maybe connects with this concept of it. I was in the mikveh. You know, mikveh is not necessarily for talking, but some people apparently approach the mikveh as a place of talking. And there's a guy in the mikveh that mamish, like I say in the toilet, like pasik pumemi, like it doesn't stop talking. Like from the second he's in the mikveh, when he's in the mikveh, he's dunking, he's back, you know, he's like mamish doesn't stop talking. He comes out, he's mamish giving drushes, he's there for 45 minutes to an hour, and then when he's outside the mikveh, come move on, he's talking. Mamish doesn't stop talking. Unbelievable, mamish. So I was like, wow, like what could you learn from this guy? Like, you can learn, always talking in the mikveh, schmoozing all the time. Or you could say, like, Ravarish and everyone, let's learn something. Maybe it's something in me, or maybe it's not so bad. So I thought to myself, wait a minute, we're also talking every second of every day. How? Our thoughts, what are our thoughts? They're nothing. Our thoughts are words. Our words are words and words and images and things like that that are talking all the time. Talking. Only thing is that maybe even he's better because he's actually verbalizing his thoughts. And if you verbalize your thoughts, you can't get necessarily caught up in all the dimyonot, all the imaginary things. Wow, this and that. Because you're always talking. You're always actually being forced to verbalize what you're thinking. Which actually, in a sense, maybe is not even so bad. Maybe he's even better than most people. He's a mamash ha'ilgiyah that he's always talking, always connecting to his words, his thoughts to his words. But we're also thinking all the time. Meaning we're also talking all the time. If so, so what should we do with that? Instead of just thinking that, well, you know, I'm not talking all the time, I'm just walking down the street now. Instead, we should recognize, wow, right now in my head, I'm talking. What should you do when you're talking? You could talk, nothing, think about this, think about that, or you could talk to Hashem, or you could talk and think in words of Torah and things like that, because anyways, we're all talking at every second of every day. So Hashem should help us that we should recognize that we're in front of Hashem all the time, we're always alive and talking, and we should be zecher to speak, and be burim, and ma'isim, and Felix and Hanukkah, which is like the light of Hanukkah.